You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome. It's Friday. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. A little later on in today's show, a brand new theater of the mind. It's a doubleheader, including a black-eyed kid encounter, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Now, as we've done the show over the years, we've had a chance to speak with many different people with different interests and aspects of the paranormal. And today we're going to take a look and speak with a gentleman who has been fascinated with the paranormal for a very long time. He's been on television investigating the Bell Witch phenomena. He has been interested also in ufology, cryptozoology, ghosts, the paranormal, and more. We're going to spend the next part of the show discussing all of this with him. So let's begin, if you don't mind so much. Nick White, our guest today, is a lead investigator of Cage the Darkness Paranormal Investigations. He was the paranormal investigator for Cursed, the Bell Witch on A&E Network. Welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for being here today, Nick.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave.
It's great to talk with you. I want to start off with a little bit of your background again. We always like to start off letting our listeners know who you are and where you've come from on this. Have you always had a passion and an interest for the paranormal, or is this something that developed, you know, in the 2000s when everybody started to, you know, awaken to this?
No. I've definitely had a passion for it ever since I was very little, around you know, under 10 years old. I've had experiences, and I've got abilities as well that I couldn't really explain when I was younger. Like, I would pick up on things like how normal people will pick up on the unnatural things in the air, like you'll get chills and things like that. I get a little bit more intense things that caused me to sometimes even think I was having like strokes or things like that. So I didn't really understand what was happening, and I had a minute.
You can't just roll past that. What do you mean you felt like you were having strokes? What was it? Was it a physical?
Yeah. Well, one of the many different kind of things that happens to me is I tend to get, like, the easiest way I can explain this is, like, say you take an egg and smash it on the top of your head.
Right.
And you know how it would run down all over your head and come down your body like that. Well, it's kind of like that. I get this kind of focus thing in my head a little bit. It feels like a kind of, I know this sounds kind of silly, but it feels like, you know, I would say a spider sense or something kind of like. And it just kind of it radiates across my body, and it's kind of like an electric like type of feeling that I guess, you know, some people would think would be similar to a stroke feeling like that. I guess I'm not sure, but it was enough to make me feel like just weird, really weird. And you know, I started noticing that when I would get these really intense type of feelings, something around me would happen. I would hear, you know, some kind of sound or some kind of disembodied voice. Actually, one of the stories that I can tell you about when it happens, what happened to me very young, that it was, you know, a full body feeling. And that's what I mean by a stroke-ish. I didn't really know. Of course, I was very young. I didn't know what a stroke would be, but it was enough to make me kind of, what is that? You know, why am I feeling this weird stuff going on?
And once you started to kind of come to terms with these abilities, would you start to, I mean, were they unnerving and frightening to you that you were sensing things, or did it just become second nature?
Yeah, well, at first they were for many years because I didn't really get into the more investigative side of paranormal until I was, a teenager when I was around 16, 17 years old. But before then, it was a little frightening, because, you're a young boy and you got these weird things going on. You're seeing and you're hearing things that's unnatural that most people don't see, or that even, at the time, it was kind of like people says, oh, you had an imaginary friend. Well, it's not an imaginary friend. It's things that I'm seeing and that I'm talking to, or even one experience that's really funny that I tell a lot of people was when I was in I was probably about 11, 12 years old, and I was walking through the hallway near my kitchen where my mom was washing dishes and stuff like that. And I was a mean little kid. I would just do mean stuff just to be mean. And I was going to turn over the trash can in my closet, which was right beside of the kitchen, just to be mean. And I reach over, getting ready to grab that trash can to turn it over, and all of a sudden, from barely 2 foot away from me, I hear this intense no. And I was like, oh, what was that? What was that? So I run over around behind my mom. I grabbed her leg, and I was like, Mom, I just heard something. She said, what is it, Nick? What did you hear? And I said, well, I told her the truth. I was like, well, I was gonna turn the trash can over to be mean, and all of a sudden something said no to me, and she said, well, that's probably Jesus telling you not to do it.
Come on, Nick. That. Jesus has more important things to do than be babysitting you. Knock it off.
I know, right? but yeah, it was pretty crazy. That's all that kind of nuts stuff going on to me when I was little.
Now, would you see things? Would you ever witness ghosts, or what you now expect would be ghosts?
Yeah, well, this one experience I can tell you about, which is really to me what was a kick in the pants to really start learning more and to really get my head into the game and figure out what's happening was. I was a little older than that. This is when we moved to another home, and this home was it was a very old home. It was that log cabinish kind of home. It was on a large area of land with a cornfield in the back, and that house had easily been there since the early 1800s, late 1700s. And I was laying in the living room, which I like to be near a TV when I sleep. I got to have some kind of sound, and. I feel like Daredevil when he laid down in that waterbed, because I hear things or I talk to myself too much. I think too fast. So I would always lay in the living room near the TV. And at this night, it was late at night, and where I was laying, my head was facing towards the back door where there's a small area that you come in the back door to come on into our house. Well, I started hearing this small, like a scratching sound, a little bit of movement, and I kind of sat my head up a little bit. I'm looking. I, of course, I'm still fairly young, so I'm like, what was that? What was that? And I hear it in increments, and it's like 1 to 2 second increments. It'll be like a scratch, scratch, move, scratch, scratch, move, scratch, scratch, move. And then all of a sudden, the easiest way that I can describe this, and it's there's no other way that I can describe it, is it was pretty much like a black smoke panther. This paw come around, and first thing I seen was a paw come around the side of the wall. And if you've seen these horror movies, when they show, say, spirits and ghosts, like sometimes they'll be jagged, and they'll jerk a little bit, jerk, and then they'll move in the jerk, that kind of movement. That first paw come around the wall there. At that time, immediately I was starting to try to scream for my mom. I was like, Mom, but I didn't, when you start screaming and nothing's coming out.
Right.
It was more like, I'm mouthing Mom. And I did that 2 or 3 times, and I'm just like, what was it, Mom? Next thing I know, here comes the other paw. And then slowly, 3 foot tall, slowly a head come around looking straight at me. This thing had red eyes, but they were smoky. It was all pure smoke, but it was in shape. It had a shape of this panther, but it was smoke, black smoky kind of stuff. And then its red eyes were smoky, kind of smoking up a little bit. And people get a kick
just out of curiosity at this point, yeah. Nick, had you been smoking up before this?
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
All right.
could have caused me to do it there, you know. but then this is the easiest way that I can describe it. People laugh at me by the way that I give this analogy, but it looked similar to an evolved form of this Pokemon, which is called Meowth, and it's called Persian. On its forehead, it had an upside down boomerangish like kind of gold like kind of shape. And it had this red, I say ruby, but it, like I said, it doesn't. None of it had an exact, you know, like a outline or nothing. It was still all kind of jagged. Had a red rubyish like kind of thing in the middle of it. And to this day, even I've had a lot of friends of mine that's into, you know, archaeological folks. There's others, cryptozoology people, things like that. That mentioned that it sounded like something that could be Aztecian or Mayan or things like that, but also from where I have Native American blood, which I have mostly Cherokee, but also Apache, that it could have been, say, a spirit guide or something like that. Because the reason I say that is when it started getting closer, because it kept going in 1 to 2 second increments towards me, I never felt threatened. I never felt like it was going to attack me, and to this day, I get one of the many feelings I get when I get near negative stuff. I get really, really sick. It feels like my whole body is being put in a vice grip, like I'm being really squeezed real bad. And I'll throw up sometimes, even if it's even more. I mean, I know you know from experience, when you get around unnatural things like that, or even malevolent or evil things, you tend to get that stomach sick anyway. I mean, I get, it's like a force with me, and I didn't get that at all. It kept getting closer and closer, and when it was probably about, say, 3 to 4 foot away from me, it stopped, looked at me, and kind of came at me. Not attacked, not jumped, but like the smoke, it just kind of dissipated toward my face. And it, never again have I seen that. Never have I heard anything like it again. And that, to me, what my opinion is of what that is after so many years, that I'm 38 now, and that was when I was around, say, 14, 15 or so. Now I think that was either God saying, hey, you need to get your butt ready because you're going to be doing a lot of things with the paranormal when you get older, or that was, say, one of my ancestral spirit guides, you know, letting me know that this is the path that I need to take. And from that moment, to me, that was enough to kick me in the butt to say, look, you need to start learning, you need to start studying, you need to start getting your shit together. Oh, excuse my language, hopefully that's not, but just get your stuff together and get ready. So I started reading every single book that I could find, anything from the paranormal stuff to physics, to even engineering, all kinds of psychology, you know, learning about the Freudian psychology. There's all kinds of stuff. And that really was the moment that it got me in gear, man.
That's pretty intense, right? I mean, you have these kind of experiences surrounding you. You're growing up. You're going through all of this. Some people, it frightens them off, wants them to shut down. Why do you feel it was such a drive to you? And why do you feel that something otherworldly was pulling you to investigate and look into this more?
Well, even when I was younger, I'd always had a fascination with, like, you know, ghosts and the paranormal and even astrology and things like that. You know, I always, even now where I'm starting to get more into ufology a little more, I've always had that drive to learn more about the supernatural or the unknown, because there's a lot of people out there that, like you say, are a little afraid of it, which there's no problem. It's, you know, it's not nothing wrong with that. I mean, because, I mean, who wouldn't be scared of some of these things that we see? So I know you've seen some pretty bad stuff yourself, but to me, I just think that I'm a person like many others that can handle that. You know, I'm not going to say I've not been scared. Of course I've been scared too, but I've never been frightened. You know what I mean? Like frightened away from it. I've been startled a little, that kind of scared, but not, I've never been frightened away. I've always been more of that leader, take charge. Go, I'm the one, like, I've noticed you do this too before. I'm the one that usually goes into the places that other people don't want to go to be able to find out the things that these people want to know, or I've been that protector of people that can't protect themselves. So that's really why, I think.
You were tapped to do the Bell Witch series on A&E. cursed, the Bell Witch. All right. Had you had experiences with the Bell Witch Cave before? I mean, I worked behind the scenes on the Ghost Adventures TV show.
Yeah.
I was the one that convinced them to let Ghost Adventures come on in and do the investigation there. And they had some really weird stuff and a lot of stuff that they talked to me about off air that was really unnerving about the site. And it's a rich, strange history. And for new listeners, or listeners that have not yet heard about the Bell Witch, can you give us a little bit of an update? Talk to me a little bit about what the Bell Witch is and how that story came to be.
Well, from my experience and my opinion, I honestly don't think there is an actual Bell Witch. I believe that all of that stuff really had to pertain to the Native American aspect of that place. And if you, I know since you've had experience with that, that place was so resonant of just that Native American feel, especially with the burial mound, with the sentinel that was going in and out of the cave itself. And I actually had to have a spirit pulled off of me that attached to me when I even left, which was a mess on its own. I got a little too excited to be on TV, and I forgot to protect myself when I went in and learned from it really quickly. But I really think that after Drury and Johnson, you know, and all them, they had went there and got that the skull from that place and brought back that thing to their home, that they had desecrated that land and that they, you know.
Well, reel it back real quick, because again, you're kind of jumping in like people know the story. I really want you to kind of introduce people to the story of the Bell Witch and where this all came from.
Sure. The Bell Witch, actually, they had thought that Kate Batts, which to most people is the Bell Witch, was putting curses on John Bell, which John Bell was the father of the family, Betsy Bell, the daughter. Betsy Bell had a lot of experiences herself, which she had a dark entity that had said that was supposed to be tormenting her. If anybody had seen the movie An American Haunting with Sissy Spacek and Donald Sutherland, that is one of the many theories that they have, where even they say that that John was molesting Betsy, and it could have been in their mind. It also could have pertained to where John and Kate Batts had a land deal, which things were going on with them, that even they had said that they had a love affair, which had went wrong. So Kate, you know, had got upset about that and said that she was putting curses and things on the family. But a lot of people don't know that Kate Batts herself was more of an herbalist, a person that would collect, you know, herbs and things to heal people. Like, say you get sick to your stomach and you take ginger or stuff like that. And that's more of what she was. So when she started saying these things towards John, like, hey, you know, I'm going to curse your family and things like that, it started to kind of compound and create this thing that they wanted to say that was the Bell Witch, which they thought was Kate Batts. But the thing is, even later on, John was actually said to be poisoned and killed by this entity, quote unquote entity, but they even said that it could have been the Bell Witch. But Kate Batts actually outlived John, so to me, in a way, that's kind of a little weird. How can, you know, Kate Batts, which is supposedly this Bell Witch, come back as a spirit and kill John when she's still alive 27 years later? Now, some people, which I could even say that maybe she astral projected if she's truly a witch and things like that, that could have actually had done that and killed him. I mean, even Andrew Jackson, after the stuff had went on, had came down with his group and documented that there was paranormal activity and things going on there. And this is also supposedly the first documented death by spirit as well. But I really still think that with all these things going on, where Drury Bell and his buddy, which Drury Bell was John's son, they had went to the burial mound, which is above the Bell Witch Cave, that the mounds people had put there, and which the mounds people, before all the different Native American tribes split up, like the Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, and a couple other ones I can't quite remember, before they actually separated into different tribes, they had the mound people, which they built a burial mound right above where the Bellwitch Cave is, and they had went and grabbed a skull. And like even on the Ghost Adventure show, what you had said, that they had went and got this skull and took it back to their home, dropped out teeth out of this skull, and then, you know, of course things are going to happen. You go and desecrate any kind of burial land, which to me, I think the whole of United States is a Native American burial ground, that things are going to start happening. So that's when a lot of the more malevolent things started happening after that. And there is also a chance that Betsy Bell, say that one of the theories was true with like the American Haunting movie, like say that John did molest her and she does have this mindset of being attacked and all that. She could have created this poltergeist entity that, you know, could have been tormenting her. But there's so many different theories. I mean, that's even barely even knocking a chip off of this, of the many different theories that they have this storyline.
The location itself, I mean, the cave, the Bellwitch Cave, yes, is there. The house is no longer there. This is a reproduction of the house, but it's known to be active. Is that right?
It is, actually. I saw a spirit there. This is one of the things that they mentioned on the show that I was on. They talk about this young girl, young, small Native American girl. But the thing is, John didn't see her. I saw her, and that's what really got me on that. I saw her 3 or 4 times. When I went down a couple times to go to do the investigation. The first time I went down, I had actually seen this little girl that was, to me, she was probably anywhere from 10 to 13 years old. She had short brown hair. She had this poofy colonial type shirt, with the little bitty string in the front that tied. Had the easiest way I can describe this, like capri type kind of pants on. But the thing is, I didn't see much, I didn't see feet or anything below, say, her shin area. Now, I saw her once at the hotel I was staying at. She peeked around the corner. And, you know, at first, of course, I'm not going to be like, oh, that's a ghost, because I don't really know yet. So I saw a little girl and I waved, because I love kids anyway. So I waved. I was like, hey, honey, how you doing? And she just kind of peeped and give me this weird, not a mean stare, but kind of like a I'm looking at you, look at me kind of stare. And she jerked back behind the wall because it was a corner where she was at. So I went down through there. I walked down a little bit and looked around the corner, and she nobody around. I was like, okay, so here we go. Because usually when this is one of the things with me, so usually stuff like that, when that happens, that means that there's something that's about to happen that I need to get ready for. So when I actually got to go to the land there where the cave is and where they've got that reproduction of the house, I actually saw her again, peeping her little head up in the window in the front of the house there. So I walked up through there, looked around, nothing again. Well, later on, I went back. I went down twice. The first time I went for the gravesite to go when we went to the John Bell's gravesite to investigate, and then I went back down again for the cave investigation. When I went for the full cave investigation, once again, I saw her again. When you were there, did you get to actually go to the cave when you went?
I didn't get to go. I was just working behind the scenes. I set it all up. I, did the interviews and got the information and then turned it all over to Jeff Belanger, the lead researcher and writer for the show. And then the guys got to go film the episode. Yeah, I want to do. That was an episode I was really hoping to get down for, but I didn't have that chance. That's what I've heard. But do you think – here's an interesting aspect. Since you've got Native American background and blood, is there a chance that maybe this is one of your own ancestors or perhaps a version of you from the past that might be just around and kind of watching and witnessing you?
Well, I always keep an open mind because that's one of the even things I tell everybody. You've got to keep an open mind when you're dealing with the unknown, because if you start closed-minding yourself to anything whatsoever, you're not going to learn and you're not going to figure out what's happening. My idea on that is what I think. When you first get into the cave, you got to weasel your way through a little bitty, I called it the claustrophobic wall, because it was just so small. Even where I'm thin, I had to turn sideways to get through it to get to the first main area. And up to the top left of the main area, there's a little grave there. The grave looks like it could have had a young child in it, and it was that old type of grave with the stones on the side, and you know, it had a stone bottom. And apparently what the lady that ran the cave said was somebody had stole the top and stole a body out of there. And to me, I think that could have been this little girl, which I want to go back down, especially after, you know, all the experiences that I had down there, that I think that she was wanting to help, to get me, you know, get me to help her to find her body, or to let her, let me know that, hey, this is my stuff. Can you do something for me or whatever? I think that's what it could be. Cause it was when I got into the cave again, like into that first chamber, that's where I saw her. She had run back through the back end again. And the funny thing is there's one thing that they didn't show on the show was when we were there, I heard a young girl scream in the back of the cave. There's two big chambers. The first one when you come in, and then there's another little claustrophobic wall. It's or hallway. That's what I called it. That you go through to get back to another open area where there's a flow stone and all this other stuff going on. I actually heard the loudest shrill scream coming from the far back end of this cave, and so I was just like, I don't know, you know, it could be. I think that's what it could be, to be honest. But I'm always got an open mind, man. You never really know. You never really know.
When you look at the fact that you think that it has more to do with the Native American legend and lore, what exactly do you think, then, is haunting there, and why?
I do believe that there is a Native American sentinel there. And I believe that he or she, I'm not, you know, cause you can't really tell. I think that he is protecting that land and that area, because the cave itself, as soon as I walk through the first, there's like a little gate that you have to go in the very front, cause they lock it up at night so people, you know, can't get in there when they're not there. But as soon as I crossed that threshold of walking through that gate, my whole body felt like it was being drained of energy. I felt like I had run for, you know, 20 miles before I even walked in there. And this was the first, you know, first of the morning when we first went there the first time. It was early in the morning. I was, you know, had my coffee, you know, I had my Red Bull. I was ready to rock. You know, I was full of energy, good, excited. And I'm usually a high energy person. If people know me, they know how I am. I'm just high energy all the time. So as soon as I walked into this threshold, it literally felt like my body was being pulled to the ground. I felt like I wanted to go to sleep. It was that much of an energy drain. And I just think that area is so spiritually charged with this Native American aspect, you know, because it's still got the burial mound and stuff above the cave. And like I mentioned, you know, there's a grave site in there. So with all that, and even there's another thing that I think that could be going on. I think there are there's wormholes in this cave. There's areas in there that there's a lot of stuff they didn't show on my show that I was a part of, which I was kind of upset about. There's a gamma radiation detector that I went through, and I'd picked up gamma radiation in areas in throughout the cave that, you know, I mean, and you know that that's indicative to wormholes anyway. And it seemed, even when Chris, the lady that run the cave, had mentioned that she had saw this girl, which this is this girl coming up again, that it looked like she had walked into this nothingness and disappeared. So I think even that, I just believe it's so spiritually charged with all of this going on that that's really what's happening. It's more of that Native American, you know, it could be a wormhole to the other side. I mean, I don't really know yet, but I do definitely want to go back and check it out. It was really a profound experience, one of the most profound experiences I've ever had.
Well, do your ancestors believe in wormholes? I mean, is that something that's even discussed? And if it is, what do they refer to it as?
Well, I don't know if it's wormholes per se, what they think it is. I would say it's just the veil that goes to the other side. You know, that when we ascend to different, you know, the different level of being, that's maybe what they're, you know, that's how they get in and out. Because they even talk about how, like, Bigfoot, you know, he's an interdimensional being. So he could be going in and out to this realm, what people would say that's heaven. You know, I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus very much, and I've seen things that made me believe, not just what I've been taught throughout my life. And I just think that it's this, you know, maybe another dimension that once we ascend, our energy ascends out of our body, what we call life, to move to that second second area or second main, maybe even the main part of our life when we ascend out of our body, I think that that's what it could be. And that's what a lot of the Native Americans think as well. It's maybe an ascension to a different level of being. And sometimes, like our ancestors come back to take care of us, and they're just moving in and out of that veil to say hi and, you know, to make sure that we're safe and protect us and things like that.
I want to investigate kind of the aspects of this. I love when we're able to speak to somebody that's got some Native American heritage and some of the belief systems that are going into that. Why would the Native American culture be so protective of certain aspects of land, do you believe? I mean, if the idea is to ascend, as you mentioned, ascension points, to ascend and leave, why leave sentinels or negative energies, malevolent spirits, guardians, whatever you want to call them? Why just to watch over bones that mean nothing after we're gone?
You know, that's actually a good question. I'm not really sure on that one. There's so many different areas across which the reason that I say that I think that the whole of United States is a Native American burial ground, because there's so many different spiritual areas across the United States. And like this one in particular, I just believe that there's a way, just like you say, you know, that there could be a way that they're going back and forth into these wormholes. It's the Einstein-Rosen bridge theory of a wormhole going back and forth through time, you know, or space. And I think that it's a protective of where people, where they want to, you know, come back to protect this area or the land or this wormhole that lets them go back and forth to just not let anything and everything in and out of these places. And even if it is bones which have been left, you know, from beings that have been ascended to the next level or whatever, wherever they go, it's still a matter of respect that, you know, this is what this being was, like myself, like if I, once I pass on, you know, I would hope that people would want to, you know, respect, my body or my bones that have been left, and watch over them, just like, say, the Sentinel has been doing for that area, and as well for the graves that are there as well. I just think it's a matter of really just about honor and respect that our ancestors have for us, and that we should have for them. And I think that's what that would be. In my opinion, I think that's what that is.
Do we know, were there any ritualistic aspects to that location as well? Anything that we know, you know, Native American culture says that this is where they, you know, did their, you know, rain dance or whatever, you know, again, not understand, but I'm just saying, you know, is there some reason that ground above all would be most active?
No, I that's one of the things I have been trying to learn about. I know there's not Native Americans, but I know there has been people there that before, I think even that the folks that own the cave now or run the cave now, I think there had been folks actually had been through there doing rituals and things like that. But I'm not sure if they had been good rituals or bad rituals. But I do know that they're from their experience and they what they say is that there had been types of rituals there. Now, older, which like say the Native American age, you know, way back then when the mounds people and things like that, it's hard to really tell because that was so long ago. But just the evidence shows us that area is a spiritual area and is a gravesite and an area where they considered a really spiritual and special place for them.
And the whole negativity of the Bell Witch, though, in that area. Mm-hmm. That was a short-lived moment, right?
Very.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there's been this curse on this property where other owners have become afflicted with illness or death or anything other negative besides, right?
Well, throughout the years, even they had said that, Cape Batts had said that this is one of the curses, which why they think that Cape Batts was the Bell Witch, was that she said that she was going to return every 7 years and attack that family line, which was pretty much a generational curse, and things had been happening. But the thing is that anybody that lived there, mostly it was the Bell family, and a lot of the Bell family had dealt with things like that. John, which was the guy that I was helping, he's a direct descendant of Betsy Bell. He had had a lot of things throughout his family line that had happened. Robert Bob Bell, which I think he was actually on the show for you guys as well on Ghost Adventures. Bob had told about things going on throughout the family line, but Bob was an actual direct descendant of John Bell. So it really was focused on the family. It wasn't like a lot of that kind of stuff did happen, during that time when John was alive and things like that. But there had been a lot of like Bell family stuff happening throughout the years where people had died or all of a sudden got killed weird ways, out of the ordinary ways that they got killed or died, or accidents happened. I remember one John had mentioned where like a cousin, an older cousin of his had, it was an accident in the woods or something where he was a logger or something like that, and a big log had just come out of nowhere and fell on him and killed him, and then all kinds of other stuff like that. But yeah, there was more than just that that went on. But that Bell family, man, they poor fellows and ladies, they've had a mess throughout the years.
Wow, that's weird stuff. We're going to continue on. I want to hear more of your investigations, other locations that you went to, and we'll also hear kind of a wrap up from you on the Bell Witch series, some more behind the scenes information, and what you think is going on there. Is there truly active hauntings that continue there and more? We'll discuss that. But first, it's time for Theater of the Mind.
Tonight, it's a doubleheader from the Darkhives. In Theater of the Mind, Chris McGraw shares two of his real-life encounters in The Eyes Have It. The first encounter that I'll share with you happened in Ybor City section of Tampa, which is located just northeast of the port of Tampa in downtown. Ybor City was founded in the 1880s and was home to many cigar manufacturers and thousands of immigrants, but started a steady decline during the Great Depression and was all but deserted by the 1970s. The early 1980s saw more rejuvenation to the area as artists looking for cheap and interesting loft spaces began to move in. Most of the real growth came in the 1990s, when bars and nightclubs began to inhabit the derelict brick buildings which lined 7th Avenue. Today, Ybor City is quiet during the day, but as the sun sets slowly to the west, the clubs and bars come to life. It's much more like Mardi Gras on the weekends, with street performers, vendors of all kinds, and scantily clad young women. It also, of course, attracts much crime and vagrancy. During Ybor City's heyday, it was home to many nefarious activities, such as organized crime, bookmaking, bootlegging, and drug and human trafficking. There are many stories of hauntings and other paranormal activities associated with many of the buildings, and the entire area has been designated as a National Historic Landmark District. My first encounter began in spring of 2009. I was dating a young lady who liked to frequent a nightclub on 7th Avenue. One night, she asked me to meet her and some of her friends there. Having only heard stories of the goth-themed hotspot, I was not even sure what to expect. But this young lady was very attractive, so odds were I would have gone even if she told me the building was on fire. This place was strange. Black lights adorned most of the lounge area as a strobe light pulsated to the mind-numbing rhythm of techno music on the dance floor. There were people on leashes and an old man dressed in a woman's lace teddy. The air was thick with pungent smoke of clove cigarettes. As the night wore on, my date became annoyed with me because the only thing I found interesting about this club was a gentleman from Ireland that I had met at the bar. After a brief argument, I told my date that I was going to walk down the street for coffee and fresh air. I was sober and going to remain that way because I was the designated driver. I exited the club via a side door that leads to an alleyway off 7th Avenue. Most of the alleys and cross streets are fairly dark because 7th Avenue is really the only busy street. As I came out of the club, I headed down the alley toward the neon-bathed main strip. I may have gotten 10 feet from the door when I heard a very monotone, indifferent voice ask, "Where are you going?" I was startled because I'd not seen anyone when I walked out. I quickly spun around to see if someone had followed me out the door. As my eyes began to focus, I saw a young boy of maybe 14 years. He looked disheveled with a dark hooded sweatshirt and dirty jeans. He seemed to be staring at the ground as he began to walk towards me. Knowing that I didn't know this boy, I responded to his question with a, "What?" As he walked toward me, I began feeling a sinking, dreadful feeling. I started backing up slowly and uneasily, as if I had stumbled upon a wild tiger in this concrete jungle. He spoke again. "Can I come with you?" The cold indifference in his voice unchanged. At this point, I was nervous, but also mad because I didn't really feel like being hassled by some punk after fighting with my date. I said to him, "What do you want, money? I don't have any for you." Right as I said that, he looked up at me. In my eyes, for the first time, I saw his. Pitch black, as the alley which I was now standing on the edge of was. Completely black. No discernible pupil or iris. Yet he seemingly stared through me. His skin color was pale and slightly yellow, as if he were anemic. "Can I come with you?" he asked again in that emotionless voice. A wave of nausea rolled through my stomach. I shouted at him, "No!" Then I turned and I ran down the busy sidewalk of 7th Avenue. It was all I could do. He was probably 8 or 10 feet away from me when I started running, and I never looked back to see if he was following me. I ducked into a coffee shop about 2 blocks from the club, and I text my date to call me when she's ready to leave. I never saw the boy again, nor did I want to. But I've talked with a handful of people who have come across vagrant kids with black eyes on their adventures in Ybor City. I knew very little about the black-eyed kid phenomena until I found your show in September of 2012, and knew nothing of them at the time of this encounter, but will never forget that chilling encounter. Incidentally, there was no smell that I could associate with the boy because the clove cigarette smell was quite heavy throughout the alleyway as well. My second encounter began in 2003. I was living in North Carolina at this time, in a small town about an hour and a half south of Raleigh-Durham, the area off U.S. Highway 1, which is a section of Interstate 95. One night, my friend and I were making the drive up to Chapel Hill to pick up a friend of ours who was going to college at UNC Chapel Hill. He was supposed to come home that day, but was having car problems and couldn't make the drive home in his car. Since the drive was a straight shot up US 1, I told him that I would pick him up. Just after dusk and some dinner, I loaded my 2 pit bulls, who were only about a year and a half old at the time, into the back seat of my car, and my friend Kenny and I set off. Much of the highway that we would be taking was only 2 lanes wide and ran through many small, sleepy, and sprawling farmlands. There was little life, much less light, save for the few cars that passed us as we wound through the country of middle North Carolina. The dogs were good in the car, as they always were, mostly just sleeping. But about 45 minutes into the drive, however, I started to smell one of the vilest smells that's ever graced my olfactory sense. I switched on the interior light to find out if one of the dogs had thrown up, wanting to get them some fresh cold water and fresh air as I cleaned my car. Kenny and I decided to drive about another 10 minutes to the next gas station. Even though the area was pretty sparsely populated, I knew it well and had driven it many times. We pulled into the gas station just off the road on a hill, and Kenny went into the store to get drinks for us and water for the dogs, while I got the dogs out of the car. I hooked their leashes on and I was walking them over to a grassy area so that they could go to the bathroom and stretch. As I walked close to the embankment of the hill, a man approached, seemingly from nowhere. He was about 8 to 10 yards away from me when the dogs and I first noticed him. I must at this point tell you that my dogs are not mean or aggressive, but they are very excitable and tend to look intimidating even though they're just rambunctious. I continued walking toward the grassy ridge that the man had just come from. I was more concerned about my dogs at that point than any stranger. To my surprise, however, the man kept walking toward me and 2 barking pit bulls. As we grew nearer to one another, I could more clearly make out the man. He was African-American in his 40s, wearing a sandy brown jacket and pants, a white t-shirt, and light brown work boots. But as he walked up to me, I could see that his eyes were white. I was taken aback at first. He walked straight up to me. As he did, the dog started to settle down. This man walked straight to me and said, "Beautiful dogs." At this point, Kenny came out and joined the man and me. I thanked him and continued to fixate on his eyes. They were white, with only specks of blue in the iris. They were not cloudy at all like a glaucoma patient.
I watched his eyes as they moved, seemingly to track perfectly. This man's vision was impaired. What's more, the dogs were now sitting, tails wagging, licking this man's hand as he talked to us, as if they wanted his praise so badly, they were willing to pull out all their charming tricks. Kenny and I talked to the man for about 10 minutes about my dogs and his dog, which he said wasn't here anymore. The man then asked where we were headed. We said up US 1 to pick up a friend. His reply was strange. North? You can't go north. That way is going to be closed. Besides, that pup doesn't feel well. You should head home. We thanked the man for his advice and said our goodbyes. As we walked toward the car, the man turned and walked down the embankment from where he had come. We thought that this was odd because he never went into the store. But there was a mess in the car still, so we focused our attention on the cleaning. It took another 20 minutes to clean out the car and get rid of the smell, and Kenny and I talked about the stranger with the white eyes as we worked our way through a roll of paper towels and a can of deodorizer. Finally, we got the dogs back in the car and decided to just head home and pick up our friend tomorrow. We were both tired and the dogs were looking a bit green, so we headed south, back towards home. About 10 miles south of the gas station, we were passed by four police cars and a fire rescue truck with their emergency lights on. This startled the dogs, which in turn startled me, causing me to swerve slightly. The police car at the rear of the pack saw this and turned around and signaled for me to pull over. I did, and he came up to the car as usual with a quick license check. He was nice and said that he had seen me swerve and wanted to make sure that I wasn't drunk. Blow in my face was his country breathalyzer test. He laughed. Whew, lots of coffee, huh? That was his analysis. I asked him why there were so many emergency vehicles. His answer was not soon to be forgotten by me. An 18-wheeler headed south tipped over just north of the station up there. Whole damn road is blocked. Thought maybe you kids cut him off or something. I was shocked. I asked him how long ago this had taken place. He said about 15 minutes or so. This meant it happened as Kenny and I were cleaning out the car and well after the white-eyed man left us. The ride home was quiet for the most part. The only real break in the silence was Kenny posing the question, what if that guy was like an angel or something? Perhaps he was. Maybe he was the yin to the black-eyed kid's yang, or perhaps he was just a dog lover. One thing is for certain, he knew that there was going to be an accident on that road before it happened.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, Nick White, my guest today as we're talking about Cursed, the Bell Witch haunting. And we're going to also talk about some of the bizarre hauntings that he's had a chance to investigate. But as we kind of wrap up talking about the A&E miniseries that you did, you said that there were some parts that you were surprised they left out and you were a little disappointed by. As you look back on that experience now and what happened there, do you believe it's truly haunted by lost spirits, or do you think that we're dealing more with like a time slip area, like a portal, like you were saying, more where things are just kind of where we're hearing bleed through and witnessing things from times gone by?
Well, that could be true there. That's one of the things I believe in, that a lot of these ghosts that we're seeing, I think are probably just people from a different type of dimension, like the fourth dimension, and they're trying to talk with us. Well, that place, yeah, I do think that there's things there, because I did have experiences myself, like you mentioned, where I said there's a few things that they didn't actually show. Was I'd actually went to the John Bell gravesite as well, and after everybody wrapped up, I mean, I'm one of them ones that I still like to try to find out more. I'm that investigator that stays later than everybody, or I'm there first. You know, I'm always that guy. And And I turned my recorder on even after everybody had packed up, took off. You know, there was only just like a one truck left waiting on me and a couple guys that was hanging out in the field. I did a few of my own EVP sessions and caught this male type kind of voice that would answer me. And it was really crazy. There was like shadows and stuff that I kept seeing in different areas. You can't tell, even I couldn't tell if it's ghosts, even nowadays, which I've been getting more into the quantum physics and things like that, which, you know, in a way that I think that all of these ghosts that we're seeing are, coming from a different dimension that are, because they're seeing us, they're hearing us, but we're not seeing them. You know, so, I mean, once in a while you'll see these shadows or things like that, but it's very rare to get these full body apparitions pictured. And even when you see them or you get pictures of them, it's not like a solid, like if you take a picture of somebody, it's not usually like a solid thing. It's always, you know, this see-through. And to me, I think that it's these beings or maybe even future beings coming through this veil and showing themselves to us or trying to talk to us and stuff like that. So, yeah, it could have been anything. But, yes, there is, in my opinion, a fact that there's things going on there that are very unexplained. And that's why I'm so excited to want to try to get back there as soon as possible and to take a lot more equipment because the things that are going on there, there was so many different experiences that I didn't have nowhere near enough. I wasn't expecting that much to happen. I didn't have nowhere near enough equipment with me at the time. I had a little bit, which I carry some with me, but there was so many different things that it could have been anything that's going on there.
You were mentioning off air to me that every time you talk about the Bellwitch stuff, you have weird things happen. And you said that you almost believe that you might have brought something home dealing with these kind of investigations. Tell me a little bit about that. What kind of weird activity have you witnessed just kind of discussing this?
Well, one thing that I'll tell you a little, I was kind of, because we had mentioned about interference with electronics and things like that. Well, I took a phone with me there that I was taking photos with. I was, you know, I'd take a video here and there and things like that. Well, as soon as we were leaving, and it's literally soon as we crossed the threshold from the driveway to the main road, my phone completely shuts out. At the time I had Verizon, so if you have a Verizon phone, you'll know that when you turn your phone on, it's got that red screen and it says Verizon on it. Well, immediately, I mean, I'm talking, this is what blew my mind. Immediately, soon as we come out of that driveway and hit that main road, my phone made this weird sound and went to that red screen, fuzzy red. And then the next thing I know, my whole SD card that I had was completely warped, completely ruined, burnt out. And I've kept this SD card. And if anybody knows how to pull off info on a really bad card or a card that has died, I've kept it. So if I can get that info off of it, because there's apparently something that didn't want me to show what I had, because I took tons of pictures in the cave. I took all kinds of pictures and video and stuff in that, you know, the remake of the farm home. I had taken photos and video everywhere. And it was literally as soon as I crossed that threshold out of that driveway, my phone died and that SD card died on me. And that was a brand, this was when the S5, Galaxy S5 came out. And it was brand new. And I had only bought that phone barely 2 to 3 months before I had even started doing that. And that died on me. And now, any time that I ever have like interviews or I even talk about the stuff, things like that, weird things start happening. And there's sounds or stuff like that causes me either to not be able to get the info out that I'm talking about or to, you know, to maybe scare me from doing it. But I don't care whatever comes around. Nothing's going to scare me from doing what I do. But that's the kind of things. And even the cave itself, I had a spirit that had attached to me from the cave because I got so excited to be on TV. I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I'll be on TV to do this. And I forgot to protect myself. And that's one of the things I always tell everybody, whether you believe in Jesus or believe, have a belief system or whatever, there's always ways to protect yourself. So never forget to protect yourself. Always. As soon as you go in and cleanse yourself and stuff, as soon as you get ready to leave. Because I'd had experiences even at my home after that. A couple different things here and there on here.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is how do you know that you had an attachment? Could you feel it around you? What was going on?
Well, the first stuff that started happening was more like an energy drainish kind of feeling. I was feeling like I'd mentioned when I went into the cave. I felt, you know, really, I was getting really tired a lot. I was getting where I couldn't hardly sleep. And I was getting more irritable, I'm a happy guy. Yeah, I usually don't, you know, get so irritable like I was. And it was anything that anybody would say to me was setting me off. I was getting easy word to say. I was getting pissy, and that's not me. Then all of a sudden, I started looking. When I'd look in the mirror, I would notice that my face wasn't, you know, it had this like a droopy type like kind of look to it. My eyes had the blue stuff under my eyes, you know, where it looked like I had bags, things like that. And it was really weird. And then I had a friend of mine say, I think you got something going on with you or something like that. And well, lo and behold, once I was, you know, laid down and looked at and checked out, that it was apparently what they had said was it was possibly a witch had attached to me. But I really don't know because I didn't see it. I can't tell you what type of entity it was.
Well, Nick, I have to ask you, do you have some kind of animal there with you?
I do.
Okay.
I've got chickens outside.
All right. Well, I just want to make sure, because as you're talking about entities and weird noises and things, I'm hearing in the background this, so I didn't know if I'm listening to a chicken or some spirit is harassing us while we're trying to do the show.
I tell you, man. See, and the thing is, okay, now see, this even tells you right here. I've got a couple chickens outside. Now, they never make any noise unless there is something going on. And I can see out my window right now, there is nothing outside. And I've never seen them actually start crowing like that unless that there is, they see something or there's things going on. Now, see what I tell you right there? Now, they never make any kind of noise until now we're talking about this stuff. And I can see right now, I'm looking out the window right now, and there's nothing out there. There's no way that they hear me because I'm inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you, see,
that's what you think. That's what you think. They can't hear you. And you know why they react that way, don't you? Because they're chicken. They're chicken. God, I kill me. I want to talk to you about the kind of experiences that you've had and locations that you've investigated. And I know off air you said that you've had some really harsh encounters, and there's been some creepy stuff. Our listeners love when we bring the creep. So let's roll into that. What are some of the most active locations you visited that were really kind of frightening?
Well, like location-wise, like the bigger locations, one of the most profound experiences I had was at Penhurst Asylum. When I got to go there, I got to go there for an event. I was a guest at an event, and me and a friend of mine, we kind of walked around the properties and things like that. And I can't quite remember which building it was that we were in. I apologize about my chickens out there. They kind of went nuts as soon as we started talking about
no problem
stuff.
No worries.
I went in. We started hearing these kind of like a clicky click sounds, like it was click 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 clicky sounds like that, and. The next thing, when you know, we get around, I wish I could remember the name of that building, and it had another little small room in it, a separate room from the building itself. And once we got into that next little room, there was an actual shadow in the back corner that it was probably say six foot tall or so, and it just kind of stood there. It was really creepy. And you know, it kind of made me like, what is that? So that was kind of cool. But the next thing I know, you know, we look around, turn back around, it's gone. And that was really cool. That place alone, I mentioned about these abilities that I get. We were up in this another little instance. We were upstairs. This one was the Mayflower Building. I remember this part because that's where we had the event. And we had went up top, and there's a room that has a little a doll and a little plane, like kids toys and stuff in the room. And there was folks that came through that had some kind of ITC equipment. I can't exactly remember what it was, but I started feeling like there was something in there with us. If I felt like it was moving around in there with us. And the next thing this person said, well, this thing started talking as soon as we come up here to this room. I was like, really? I was like, okay, well, what does it say or something like that? And it said friend first. And then, I was like, yeah, I'm your, I started talking out loud so that way I could hear it. And I was like, yeah, I'm your friend. I'm not here to bother you, not here to hurt you. I always make sure I say stuff like that when I go into locations, no matter if they are large or if there are cases that I take for families or whatever it is. First thing I do as soon as I go through that door is I say my name just like I'm walking into anybody's home and, a person's home. I'm going to say, hey, I'm Nick. I'm not here to harm or hurt or do anything offensive to you. I'm just wanting to understand what's going on. I'd like to have a conversation with you, things like that, So I start saying, well, my name's Nick. I'm your friend. I'm not here to hurt you, anything like that. And I started reaching down towards this little plane thing. And the next thing that thing said was plane. And I was like, okay, that's kind of, I was like, okay, so you don't want me to touch your plane? And it said steal. Like steal, like take kind of steal, and I said no, I'm not going to steal your plane or anything like that. And it kept doing that, and we had like a full conversation, and it was not just random words that came out of this thing for me to be able to talk to it. And that was really cool. That was one of the I've had a few different kind of experiences like that, but that was such a really. And I felt like it was a young kid that had, which really I feel bad when I see or I hear that kids could possibly be in this area or any area that they're in, because especially with that Penhurst Asylum, with so much bad things that had went on there and all the history of that place. If you know about Penhurst, you know about that kind of situation. And I felt moved at that time. I'd even kind of dropped a tear. I mean, I'm a little sensitive to some things like that. I cry. I don't care to say I cry, and that was more of a really moving experience for me, a lot more than really too creepy. But, it's stuff like that makes me want to understand the unknown more and to try to figure out, is it that they are stuck in these areas that they're at, or are they in a separate dimension that they're seeing us and don't know how they're talking to us, especially kids, because you're like, how are you guys even there? How do you see me? How are you talking to me? How did this entity know that I'm reaching down for its plane? Stuff like that. And I think that's one of the coolest. And of course that one little section was a little creepy when I'd seen, me and my buddy had seen that thing standing over in the corner, just kind of standing there. It wasn't really doing anything, and stuff like that. But that would be one of the coolest, I'd say, even experiences that I've had.
Do you have ways when you go into a location like this and you start getting that kind of activity? And I know you said you politely kind of introduce who you are so that you're trying to be respectful doing so. Mm-hmm. Do you ever, what are some of the ways that you go about getting the most response from the spirits? For people that are interested in trying to communicate or connect with the spirits they think that they've got in their home or in their world, what are you, going through that? What are some of the tips that you have for the listeners?
Well, the first thing is yourself. You are the most valuable tool of any investigating at all whatsoever, because your body itself will react to any kind of unnatural things that's in the air or around you. When I either pick up a case or I'm going to somewhere to find spirits or whatever, the first thing that I'll do is I will stop and listen. I'll stop moving. I'll just, sometimes I'll even close my eyes and start listening and just try to, acclimate myself to that atmosphere and to try to see if I feel anything. Now, even though I do have some different type of abilities, anybody whatsoever will get this unnatural, or your body will react somehow to this unnatural thing that's in the air. So if I feel... Personally, if I go in, if I feel like, if I'm getting drained, of course, things like that, you know, I'll always first try to look for the most natural explanation. I'll try to see if, you know, if there's, you know, some kind of electricity or something that's really powerful there, or, you know, anything, maybe even a high EMF given off from something, which I would take like a digital EMF meter, because that's usually your best meter to take is something that's digital. That way you can really tell what's getting picked up, because it's, and I always look for at least a 2.0 milligauss or more, because the earth itself gives off up to 2 milligauss. So even if you're picking up a 1 point anything, you can't really verify that with a spirit activity unless now there's no electromagnetic frequency or any kind of anything in the air or human generated electromagnetic frequency or anything like that. Sometimes that it can show you a little spike, but it's always one of those when in doubt, throw it out kind of things. You know, if there's not a definite kind of explanation, or at least an unknown explanation for that situation, then I won't really look more into that. And now, say if it is a case that I'm picking up for people, I'll do even more than that. I'll go in. I'll try to find out all the natural things that are going on, like, you know, even where you have, if you have sounds, you know, I check all the windows, doors, things like that to see if there's drafts or sounds coming from there. You know, I'll always check the basements and the attics and things like that, look around on the outside of the homes, find out where, you know, everything is to get a feel of the place itself. And then one of the first few things is, of course, is I'll grab a digital recorder. Now, sometimes I'll even grab one that's not digital. I'll grab one with a tape, because sometimes even a tape record, like a small recorder with tape, will pick up a little bit better sometimes. So I'll just try to, you know, ask basic questions, just try to find out, hey, is there something here? And you know, that same question that we all ask, hey, what's your name? You know, or do you see me? Or you know, what year is it? But when I ask questions, it's not just a open-ended question. Every single question that I will always ask is a yes or no question. So that way I can really narrow the answer down. If you had happened to see Kirst on the show, I pull out a K2 meter and I'll say, hey, you know, if you're a female, can you make this light up to the red? If you're a male, can you light this up to the red? You know, any answer that I try to get is always going to be narrowed to no, that's what's answering me. And it's not just something that's like a K2 itself. It has bad problems with picking up cell phones and other things like that, which I always tell everybody, make sure you turn your cell phone on airplane mode or off, because anything, that thing picks up all kinds of stuff. But that's what I always try to do, is try to narrow those answers down to really start determining. And then from there, it's all about, if it's a case, I'll start going to, say, the circuit court or the clerk's office in the whatever town I'm in, to really start getting more evidence on the land, on the home, you know, try to determine or investigate if things had happened in that home before. And sometimes I'll even ask, you know, previous tenants if I can even find them for things like that as well. But if you go out, just always make sure you protect yourself. That's one of the main things I tell. I say that a lot, but the reason I say that a lot is because I've had so many experiences.
Well,
just protect yourself.
What are some of the experiences you've had, not at the Bellwitch, but in general? Have you had any where you've left, you know, it's left you kind of shaken by what's going on?
When I first got started, the first few cases were a little unnerving, because I know this kind of gets old, where people say about demons and demonic and malevolent things, but it seemed like the first few cases that I started picking up were more of the demonic or malevolent type. And it was at the time I didn't know a lot yet about that type of hauntings, because you know, it's kind of rare. I mean, the whole, you know, say 23, 24 years I've even started doing this kind of stuff or learning about it, 20% of the time it has been evil or demonic or malevolent. But it seems like the first few cases that I got, of course, are going to be that type of stuff. And you never really know. You can't expect or know what's going to happen with these things, because anything can happen. They're going to try to get in your mind, which I would see things.
Well, when you've gone up against cases that have a demonic force,
uh-huh.
Talk to us about that. Give me one of the best examples you've had, and how
Sure.
How extreme it got.
Well, I can. I'm not going to name any names because I don't. I don't ever.
You know, no, totally understandable. Sure. Like that.
But
right.
This one home, which was, it was probably a couple years once I had got into it. I actually, they had had a barn. It was a nice little farm area, like where they had say, there was, you know, a few acres of land, had a farm, had a barn, and all this. And they had a lot of things that were happening to the family. They had a younger daughter that things were happening to her, it was frightening her that every time that they would go out to their barn, they would hear sounds and scratches and stuff like that, sounds. Then all of a sudden they started getting scratched, they were getting scratched by threes, of course, which that's that mocking of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And they were getting bruised up. They were like getting hit, and things like that was happening. So the first, of course, they were saying more. They were focused more, like they were saying that it was more in the barn. So that's the first place that I wanted to go to try to see what's happening. Well, as soon as I opened the barn itself, I started, of course, getting that feeling that I mentioned, like I get earlier. I started getting like I was getting punched in the stomach. It wasn't that I was getting punched, but that's the feeling that I was getting. I felt this like I'd ate raw meat or bad meat or something. You know, I started getting like this nauseous, bad, nauseous feeling, like I just wanted to just throw up, just bad. As soon as I got in, first thing I did was throw up. So I started puking. And then the thing was, I didn't eat beforehand, and I was throwing up chunks. And it was like blood kind of things and really bad stuff, which kind of shook me a little bit there. So I got out of there because this is the thing. That stuff may startle me or it may shake me a little bit, but I'll always go out, collect myself, breathe, get a little water, whatever, and go right back to it, you know, because there's reasons that I do. I think God's got me on this path for a reason to do these things, to be able to help people that can't help themselves or stuff like that. So I collected myself, got back out, drank some water, you know, calmed down, went back again. Of course, I still felt a little nauseous, but I didn't really throw up that time. As soon as you go, and the barn was probably, it was maybe a quarter of a football, say 10, 20, 30, about 30 yards wide, that big. It was for horses and things like that, you know. And as soon as I got back in a little further from the door, I started hearing things like a horse. And it was kind of like that sound. Now, but the thing is, all their horses were gone. There was no horses in this barn. That's what really got me. I was like, okay, well, that's kind of weird because all their horses aren't in here. They were out in the pasture or whatever they was doing. So I got a little further back in. And I start hearing this again, this like that kind of sound. Back in the left of the where I was looking at, I see like a reddish glow. It wasn't detailed. There was no humanoid form. It was just a small reddish glow in the corner of one of these stalls. Well, I wanted to get a little closer to it, and as I got closer to it, this thing, it seemed like a horse was standing in front of me. I kept hearing like. kind of sound. I heard this scratchy, not really a scratchy, like say a horse digs into the hay, you know, with their hooves, stuff like that. Sounded like that. It's like that, like that. Next thing I know, it's standing right in front of me and blowing air every time it would do this into my face. I start feeling this air all over my face. My shirt even was shaking from the wind that this thing was blowing on me. I was stunned. I was startled. You know, I was a little scared. And anytime I have anything like that going on, the first thing I'm out loud, I'm saying, Lord Jesus, I said, watch over me, protect me, give me strength to be able to have the wisdom to fight this thing or to understand what's happening. Well, I said that out loud. And every time I do that, I feel grounded. I feel like it's kind of a funny analogy, but I feel like I'm Superman. I feel like I have this power, not really a superpower. Nothing. I just feel strong, you know. So I said this, and it's still blowing. But I shut. I swear it wasn't. I shut my eyes. I blink, and this thing's completely gone. I had to, of course, you have to have priests or shamans or people like that to be able to take care of these type of entities. So, of course, I found out, I investigated it enough to find out that that was definitely some kind of demonic or really malevolent entity that was torturing this family. This thing got up in my face to let me know that it was there. And so I got a hold of some clergy and they got to take care of it and found out it was some kind of demonic entity that had been there for years. I did some research on this land, and apparently on their land there had been satanic rituals and things like that of that nature that was going on in that area. They had found carvings on these trees and stuff that surrounded their farm area, or not really surrounded, but just on the edges of their farm area. There was carvings of upside down, pentagrams, upside down pentagrams. There was just stuff like that all over the property. And that scared the shit out of me. You know, this thing's up in my face blowing right on me and I don't see anything. But it was a red glow, but when it got up in my face, that red glow was gone, but it was in my face blowing on me. My shirt was shaking from the air that was coming from this thing blowing on me like that. I heard hooves and things, so I don't know if it was, I don't know if it was just like saying, hey, man, you need to get up out of here, or hey, I'm letting you know it's here, or if somebody had, research of satanic rituals and stuff like that had went on this property had brought something there. And I just don't, what got me is I couldn't figure out why or what had caused this thing to show itself enough to start torturing this poor family. And then that's the thing I tell people a lot now is, I don't care how many experiences you've had with the demonic or malevolent or just mean spirits in general, you can never tell really what's going to happen or how. It's the unknown. It's the elusive unknown. It's just, and that was one of the few, experiences that could made me pee a little bit, It was pretty crazy.
Made you pee just a little bit, huh?
Just a little bit, yeah.
What do you do when you run into something like that? What do you do to, you got to keep your cool and not freak out the family. You just dab off the pee and get out?
That's it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Shake it off, Of course, you can't, as an investigator, show that kind of fear or that kind of jolt to a family that had been tortured for a long time. That experience, the way that, I handled it was, once I got out of that barn and collected myself, I explained that there could be something that is not good there, that I want to have clergy come in to possibly take care of the thing. Now, if the families or people or wherever it is, if it's a case that I'm taking, if they do want to know about everything, I will disclose full everything that I experience. But my job, and which most jobs as an investigator, is to is to bring hope or to bring calm, or at least to give people answers of what's happening in that situation. And you never really do want to, frighten people like that. You want to say, I've got it. I've got people. And even me personally, like if there's something that I don't think I can handle, I know enough people that I'm not just going to leave and not leave them with something or somebody to help them. I'm going to get in contact with somebody more experienced than me, because I always say I'm not an expert. I might know a little bit, but there's always people that knows more than you do. And especially if you get in situations like that with demonic or some kind of malevolent entity or bad or spirit that you can't handle, I'll always turn it over to somebody that's more experienced and has a better way to be able to handle things like that.
That's a great plan. Yeah, don't go in over your head, and if you find out you're in over your head, get help right away. Yeah, it gets, we'll go out on occasion and help families if we can and try to get some answers for people when they're dealing with the paranormal. How often when you get called into an investigation, do you get on site and you find out pretty quickly it has nothing to do with the paranormal?
It's more frequent than not. Sometimes that these folks, when I get contacted, just need somebody to listen. I've found that, Not everything, of course, not everything is paranormal or even, you know, malevolent or anything. Sometimes it's just a way of where this, say, a family or a person or whatever is just having so many things going on in their life that it may not be good at the time, and they just need somebody to talk to or somebody just to listen to them and to understand. Because, even myself, you know, I've been in situations, especially this past year with my back having me down, that it's good to have somebody to listen and to talk to. And that's what I've found a lot of it is. But now I don't ever discredit or don't expect anything, because there's always – there's something, whether it be paranormal or they just want somebody to talk to. So it's usually one or the other.
All right, we've just got a little bit of time left here together, but why don't you hit me up with two more of your creepiest stories, and we'll wrap up with that. What are two more of the as you put it, holy shit moments you've had with doing the paranormal?
Let's see. I do have I can tell you. I've actually I did a little small YouTube episode on this. I went to the ghost town of Elkmont, which is right up here in the Smoky Mountains. That is an area where folks had lived years ago around this area called the Wonderland Hotel. And the Wonderland Hotel was a place where everybody would always go to for like hunting and fishing and things like that, because that's what a lot of people came to the Smoky Mountains for years ago. And this area was abandoned. The hotel itself, when it was abandoned, I know there's stories. I've heard a couple different stories from folks that live around there in that area that things had went on and people had died. And of course, you know, if there's hunting and things like that in mountain areas or forests, there's bound to be accidents and things like that happens, you know, and stuff like that. And this was actually a spot where the Little River Railroad had went, that where everybody, when they come to go hunting and fishing, that's where that was the main point there. Well, I'd went there with a team member at the time to go and just kind of check out the area, you know, just to see if anything's going on and just to, because I'm curious. I like to go. I call myself a paranormal tourist sometimes, because it's because I like to go to these different places just to see or to experience the paranormal, you know, sometimes. And well, this area in particular, they said that there was some older gentleman that had maybe possibly died there or something. That's what one of the people had told me, that he had a son or something that had died there as well. We get into this the hotel area, and as soon as you get in through the front, you already feel kind of weird when you get in there. I didn't get that I didn't get that negative feeling like I do when I get in bad places, but I did feel like there was like a okay. Say you get two opposite magnets, you know, and they have that force where they won't go together. You know, that kind of opposite magnetic kind of feel. That's the way that place felt to me. When we went through there, there was sounds and voices, and it sounded like conversations was going on in the top or the second floor of that area. So of course, here I am, the very first one to usually go into these kind of places. I was like, all right, let's go. So I started heading up. You know, we go upstairs, and it's like you see these shadowish kind of figures just moving in and out of these rooms. I mean, we're just standing there at the end of the hallway, and as you stand there, you're just watching like shadows that's going back and forth. Well, at first we couldn't really tell what it was. Well, you know, I went outside to look around to see if it was possibly maybe trees or something like that that's causing us to visualize this or whatever, but it just seemed like there was things going on. And then the next thing we heard was music coming from the main area downstairs. When you first walk in long ago at Wonderland Hotel, another thing that went on there was they had this small little dance floor in there, and people would come and they would, you know, have fun and listen to music and things like that and dance, all this. And we started hearing full-blown music coming from downstairs. Now, where this area is way up in the Smoky Mountains. There is no electricity whatsoever that even comes close to this thing. There are nobody around them. The only people that even come out to that where the area is like hikers, you know, that want to go on a long hike or something like that. So, of course, we run back downstairs, no sound. looked all over the place, went outside, hollered out real loud, "Hey, is there somebody around here? Is there somebody out here playing music, anything?" It's nothing. So we went right back upstairs to see if it would do it again, and lo and behold, here goes this music again. And it was like, where is this even coming from? Went right back down again, gone. I mean, that right there, I'm like, I don't even know what's happening. There's no music, there's no electricity, nobody outside, nothing whatsoever. Well, after we did, I call it a pararecon because I'm ex-military, so our little pararecon, you know, that's what that was. Literally not just, say, a week to 2 weeks after that, somebody or something burnt that hotel down to the ground.
Ooh, geez.
Yeah, and there's, and it's so weird when it had happened. It, literally just 2 weeks, around 2 weeks, right after we had went up there for that little pararecon. So I go back up there, of course, a little while after because, you know, they're cleaning up the area a little bit or making sure there's nothing going on. Well, I go back up there, and I catch tons of EVPs. There's stuff saying, hey, there's stuff trying to say something about, one of them said something about fishing or something like that. And I go up there now. I try to take people up there just to try to get the different experiences because, you know, say there was these spirits or these entities that were there that wanted to go back because they felt comfortable or they enjoyed being there and things like that. You know, now they're going to be pissed off because either something or someone had burnt this thing to the ground and caused more of an upheaval of energy than that was already there in the first place. So that's what really gets me about stuff like that, you know. And it seems like every time that there's something that I catch or something goes on, there's always something that even tries to prevent me from doing more or from helping. I don't know if it's me personally or what. I'm not saying that I'm like God's gift to the world or anything, but it seems like every time that I try to help somebody or help a situation or even a spirit like this, something causes me or holds me back or causes me not to be able to. And that was a really, and it, to me still, I don't know, you know, I don't know why it happened or how it happened. That was really a, really kind of crazy, man. And even like you'll go around, like there's a walkway or like a trail that goes even back further from that Wonderland Hotel area on back into the ghost town area to where these houses are abandoned. And there's voices that come from these houses. I heard a laugh. I've actually got that on the one little YouTube video I made. It's like a little laugh. It's like a kind of sound that came through a window out of one of them. And it just, you know, it's a really, really amazing and spiritual place. And it seems like I get pulled to these type of places, like not for cases. Cases I usually just, it's just for helping folks or something. But places like this, I get pulled to these type of places or somehow it makes me hear about it or grabs my attention or tries to grab my attention enough for me to go check these places out. But it's really weird. That was one of the weird experiences I've had for sure.
Now, you've also started to branch off into investigating and looking into and researching ufology and cryptozoology.
Yeah.
What intrigues you most out of all of the three topics, UFOs, cryptos, or ghosts? Where does your love really lie?
Well, to me, I call myself now, which is what I call, or what our team calls ourselves. We call ourselves Uncaged Investigators now, not just a paranormal investigator or a cryptid or whatever, Bigfoot or whatever, because to me, in my opinion, all of it is related, all of it completely. You need to learn paranormal. You need to learn how to investigate cryptids. You need to learn how to investigate UFOs because. Just as one of the examples, I say, you go into an area and you're investigating, just say a paranormal. So you're going in for a ghost or something, and you're investigating an area, and you pick up gamma radiation, you know, and gamma radiation is indicative with wormholes. Okay, well now, say next door, this person's like, well, hey, I had happened to see this creature walking in and out or something like that, and say, you know, say it's a quote unquote Bigfoot that they're okay. Well, now you've got two investigations. Now you need to know how to investigate Bigfoot or a cryptid and the paranormal as well. Well, even with that gamma radiation in that wormhole, if people know with UFOs where they land or have, you know, have been had these abductions or things like that, they tend to give off gamma radiation or some type of radiation. Well, now say that it came from this wormhole, or it created the wormhole because that UFO had came there, or, you know, and they say Bigfoot's an interdimensional being. It's one of the theories about him. Say he came in through that wormhole that's created by that UFO that came there with the radiation. You see what I mean? There's so many different things that you need to learn and need to understand to be able to investigate that type of stuff. And I believe that it's all related somehow. I've even got into now starting to learn about like quantum physics and, you know, engineering, things like that, because that's why I call it the elusive unknown now. It's not just ghosts or not just cryptids. It's not just UFOs, but it's all kinds of things that's going on. And even now that there's even more UFO sightings and stuff within this past year. And everybody makes fun of me because I say this, but for years I've been saying, look, man, aliens are coming. They're coming. And I think they're coming soon. For some reason, this past year, where I've been put down with my back, I've actually had to step back from investigating this past year. But what I have done during this year is to study more. You know, I went on YouTube. I found Leonard Susskind. He's a professor from Stanford that teaches quantum physics, and I've started learning more about that kind of stuff. And I think that this year I'd been put back as a crucible for myself to be prepared to what's happening this year. I really think, in my opinion, this is why I keep saying in my opinion, because I don't ever want people to say that I know everything. In my opinion, I think that this year that we're going to be visited by extraterrestrials, and it's going to be more of a profound experience to where everybody sees it. And the funny thing is, to even verify me saying that, is that Nostradamus actually predicted that 2017-2018 was the years that some kind of extraterrestrial contact was going to happen. So that's even another reason I've started getting more into the ufology and things like that. I'd recently seen, not just a few days ago, that they had seen something in Michigan that people think that is a meteor that came down, and this flash. And even in Russia, they found or they saw not too long ago that this big flash and a boom had happened. Well, I that could be them, you know, dropping off some recon, you know, or some kind of people to check out what's going on. And then here just not what, a few days ago in Hawaii, they had this missile scare. You know, where somebody apparently had pressed the wrong button, which the thing is, you got to go through four or five different steps to actually press this button, or there's not a single button. So that could be where people are extraterrestrials are trying to get a recon of what kind of capabilities we've got to defend ourselves and things like that. So it's all connected somehow, and that's why I just keep trying to learn more and tell everybody you've always got to keep an open mind. You got to just keep learning. Knowledge is power in the unknown, you know.
And that's why everybody should continue listening to the best in paranormal talk radio, Beyond the Darkness. Nick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely, man. It's been a great pleasure.
Have a great rest of your day, and thank you all. Be safe, be kind, love one another. We'll be back with you Monday right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.